It's hour two of Catholic Answers Live. Hello there. I'm Sherry Brownrigg, and great hour with Jimmy Akin last hour, and this hour, there's more of the same. We've got Dr. George Delgado with great content for you. This is Pro-Life Open Forum, and Dr. Delgado, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
Yeah, it's always great to have you here. And this Pro-Life Open Forum really is about, anything regarding life issues. If you've got a question about abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, embryonic stem cell research, infertility, et cetera, all those interesting topics, you can flood the phone lines. And the number again is 888-318-7884. And Dr. Delgado, I know we've had you on the show many times before, but I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of a sketch about why you are the man for the Pro-Life Forum. Dr. George Delgado is the president of the Steno Institute, and that is stenoinstitute.org. You can find out more about it there. And it's a nonprofit which is devoted to pro-life research, especially focusing on abortion pill reversal. And he is a medical advisor of Abortion Pill Rescue, a program of Heartbeat International. And he practices family medicine and providing medical care that is faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church for newborns, children, and adults. And I know with the abortion pill reversal that there's a few updates on that. Not many folks really know that's available. So let's talk about that first, but then let us know what's new.
Sure. So yeah, many people don't know that it's available. Maybe people aren't aware actually that today about 40% of all abortions in the United States are medication or pill abortions. That is, they take RU-46, also known as mifepristone, and then 24 to 48 hours later, they take a second pill called misoprostol or Cytotec, and this causes the abortion. And this is approved in the United States up to 10 weeks of age of the baby. So this is becoming more and more common. In some European countries, 80% of the abortions are mifepristone abortions. Mm-hmm. So that's what's been going on with abortion. The good news is that if a woman changes her mind after taking the first pill, the mifepristone, we can give her a second chance at choice, and she can choose to reverse her medical abortion. And we've had great success. The last study we published, our success rate was 64 to 68% with our best protocols. And we're very happy to report Heartbeat International is keeping track, and they tell me that over 900 babies have been born after successful reversal of their mother's medication abortions. So that's great news, with about another 100 to 150 pregnant. So we're coming up on 1,000 babies born after successful reversal.
That is actually wonderful news, and I love the way that you put that, a second chance for choice.
Yeah.
Because you're using the language that the other side likes to put out there. They've got that PR machine that's pretty effective, and that obviously is who you're trying to reach. And so using their language is really essential. But I like that, a second chance for choice. It's wonderful.
Yes, that's really what we give them. And I think it's perfectly appropriate to use all of the marketing experience that they've gathered, and they've spent their millions and millions of dollars, and there's no reason why we can't use that to our advantage.
Yeah, well, I think we have to. You know, they, as you said, have millions and millions of dollars to use on that PR campaign. We don't have quite the same, but we certainly have the Holy Spirit on our side, and that is probably more valuable than any amount of money, but we have to get it right. We've got to use that that inspiration there. So, and I understand you've got a gala coming up?
We do. So the medical director of Culture of Life Family Services in San Diego County, and we have a gala coming up on October 19th for anybody who wants to come to San Diego. And our guest speaker is going to be Abby Johnson, who, of course, right now is a really popular speaker because of the movie Unplanned that's based on her book Unplanned. And, of course, she tells her story of how she was a Planned Parenthood clinic director who witnessed an abortion by seeing it on an ultrasound screen. And at that moment, she was convinced that what she was doing was wrong, and she had the courage to walk away from the killing fields. And then she became a pro-life advocate. Her organization, And Then There Were None, has helped shepherd 500 or more people from the abortion industry out of that and into different jobs where they can serve God more fully and where they are no longer complicit in the killing of preborn babies and the victimization of women who are in very difficult circumstances with their pregnancies.
And if someone did want to come to that gala to hear Abby Johnson and support the organization, where would they get more information?
So they would go to colfs.org, and there'd be a button there for clicking on the registration. And registration closes Friday, so they only have a few days. And but we're looking forward to having lots of excited pro-life supporters there.
Yeah, well, that's always wonderful to be in a room with many other pro-life supporters. I know a lot of our listeners have probably had that experience, and it feels great. It feels great. So let's head to the phones now, because the calls are starting to stack up for you, Dr. Delgado. And the number again is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Here's Mary in Indiana. She's on Redeemer Radio, listening to Redeemer Radio. Hey, Mary, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. Delgado, for all you do for family and for life.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have a granddaughter and her husband. They're both 25 and suffering from infertility. They did work with a NAPRO technology doctor, and it's discovered that he has no sperm. Specialist said possibly there's a blockage that could be corrected by surgery, but there's no guarantee. They are now talking about artificial insemination, and I want to know how to talk to them about that.
Okay. Now, are they talking about artificial insemination using another man's sperm or concentrating
his
another man's donor? Okay. Right. And are they Catholic?
She was raised nominally Catholic. He's not.
Okay.
When she told me, she knew what my reaction would be. She wanted to make sure I didn't hear it from anybody else.
Okay. And do they both profess to be Christians?
Catholic Church.
Mary, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you there, so maybe if you can speak directly into your phone, that would be great.
She understands in the eyes of the Catholic Church that it's not right.
Okay. Well, so they're really, they're not Catholic, or at least not practicing Catholics. So I think I would, go about this from a natural law and a general Christian perspective. And the natural law perspective is that a child has the right to be procreated in the marital embrace of his biological father and mother. And when you use artificial insemination, and particularly when you use donor sperm, then that really is an affront to the dignity of the child being created into a family where his biological father is not even going to be part of his life. And he'll have a biologic connection, but nothing else. And that act of bringing in a third-party sperm violates the exclusivity of the marital covenant that your granddaughter and her husband share. So it is really, it's akin to infidelity, really, on that level, that they are not being totally faithful one to another. So those would be kind of the important bedrocks that I would talk about with them. I would also discuss the practical complications that could arise later when this child knows that he or she has another father who has not been part of his or her own life. There will be a natural tendency to seek out that biologic father, and that, of course, will create strains on the family. It will create stress for that child. And all of this is because they chose to act this way. So really, they're not keeping what's best for the future child in mind by doing this. Then the other thing is you can talk about in the Bible, going back to Genesis, how when God made us, he made us in his image and likeness, male and female, he created them. And so that's a very powerful verse. And of course, St. John Paul II uses this in his Theology of the Body. You don't have to talk about Theology of the Body necessarily as such because they're not Catholic, but you can talk about that Bible passage. And how if we are to truly be an image and likeness of God, then we should conduct ourselves the way God does. And the way God does in the Holy Trinity is a total selfless gift of self, Father to Son and Son to Father, total and exclusive. And so that's mirrored in the marital relationship. The husband and wife are totally, exclusively giving themselves to each other. And so that image is broken and is violated by having, first of all, the third-party sperm, and secondly, by having the technician involved who is going to inseminate your granddaughter. So now really there are going to be four parties involved. Well, really only three, because the your granddaughter's husband is really not involved at all, simply a bystander. So you have the granddaughter who's getting inseminated, the inseminator who is a physician or a technician, and then you have the sperm donor. So two individuals who are totally outside of this marriage covenant are now violating that exclusivity. So that does not image the Holy Trinity. So I would definitely bring that up. And finally, I would talk to them about, you know, what really is a child to you? And if are you masters or are you stewards of the gifts God gave us? When we're good and faithful stewards, then we follow God's plan. When we assume the role of master, then that's when we get into trouble, because we actually kind of turn ourselves into gods. And if you look at a child as a gift from God, then you know that God sometimes gives gifts, sometimes he doesn't, and we don't feel like we have a right to it. But if you look at a child as a right instead of a gift, then when you have that attitude of the child being a right, then you psychologically can justify going to many, many different steps, including in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, using third donors, third person sperms, in order to achieve that. So the child then goes from being a gift to really becoming a commodity. And we never want to treat people as commodities. We want to treat them as gifts, as highly valued gifts, as great gifts from God. And so I think they really, you need to also talk to them about that mindset, and in a very gentle way, of course, but remind them that children are gifts. They're not rights. When you make it a right, then you make the child a commodity, and you go down a very, very bad path that ultimately is going to hurt the child in the ways that I described.
Yeah. Beautiful answer, Dr. Delgado. And Mary, I hope that helps, because that certainly is so important, thinking about that child there. All right, we have more to come. We've got Ann and Deanne are both up next. And you can call in as well, because now there's an open line at 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support. On the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to ewtn.com/wings, fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends, and pretty soon we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett, who is away. You know, we all experience spiritual attacks. Don't you think that's true? Sometimes, you know, you don't quite know it's a spiritual attack, but do you know how to properly prepare yourself when they come? Because they will come your way. Well, here's an idea. You can download our new ebook, The Whole Armor of God, Your Guide to Spiritual Warfare. Just visit shop.catholic.com today, and you can look for the banner at the top of the page and just download your free copy right there. That is The Whole Armor of God, Your Guide to Spiritual Warfare. Dr. George Delgado is with us, and it is a pro-life open forum. And Dr. Delgado, I think we're just going to get back to the phones here, because we've got a lot of calls coming in, and that's always the case. But next up, we've got Ann. She's in Vancouver, Washington, listening on 88.3 FM, Modern Day E Radio. And hello, Ann, you are on the air.
Hello, thank you. Dr. Inshari, I'd like to find out what your understanding is in this situation. I understand that there are at least hundreds of thousands of snowflake embryos, frozen embryos, in the United States alone. And I don't know if it's illicit for Catholics to adopt these unborn children and, you know, have them implanted in the mother and bring these children to birth. What is the understanding of the church?
Okay, now, that's a great question. And the short answer is the church has not made an official pronouncement on this, but there have been some indications of where she is leaning. And so the snowflake children, like you said, these are frozen human embryos that usually are, quote, leftovers, unquote, from in vitro fertilization. What often happens with in vitro fertilization is that they will fertilize more than one egg to create more than one human person, but they don't always implant all those human embryonic persons. So they save some. They do various things with them. One of the things they'll do is look under the microscope and judge which ones look fittest. And so this is eugenics at the very earliest age, isn't it? It's you're judging which ones are fittest, and they discard, throw away, i.e. kill, the ones that don't look fit. The ones that look healthier, they freeze those in case later on the parents want more children or if they can do something else with them. So these frozen embryonic persons are really in a state of suspended development, suspended animation. Pope John Paul II wrote that their state is absurd, and that's true. That's true. It's just a situation no one should ever find themselves in. It's a huge affront to their human dignity to be frozen so that your development stops, and to be frozen in an environment where you naturally would not be. At that age, they should be in their mother's womb. So the question is then, is it a good idea to allow people who want to have children to have a mother take hormones to prepare her uterus and then to have these one or two of these embryos implanted in her body? So the whole sentiment about this is laudable, and I think it's very noble that people would want to rescue them. I think that's a very good intention. However, personally, and many conservative Catholic bioethicists feel that this is not the best approach, that this is one of those ethical dilemmas that does not have a good solution. The analogy is the toothpaste tube. When you squeeze the toothpaste out, you made a mess, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. It just doesn't work. And this is one of those situations where you just can't undo what you've done. And the reason why we feel that the snowflake adoption, the embryo adoption, would not be a good idea is because the developing embryonic person has a right to develop in the physiologic environment that belongs to his or her biologic mother, not to mention that he or she had his or her dignity demeaned by being produced through in vitro fertilization. But that physiologic interaction with the biologic mother is very powerful. It's the most intimate relationship that we ever have. For those 9 months when we are in our mother's womb, we have a relationship that no one else will have because of our uniqueness as a human being and because of the chemical and the physiologic interactions that we have, even sharing blood crosses over from one to another. And so it is something that is very important and that cannot be minimized. So because of that, and because of the other associated complications of having that kind of a gestation, a pregnancy, I think that is best not done. As far as what to do with these embryos, we don't have a good solution. I think my advice now is to keep them frozen and to allow them die as natural a death as they will have. I've asked a bishop friend of mine what he thought about maybe baptizing them, knowing that the water of baptism probably would lead to their death, and he said he would have to think about that. So I don't have a good solution from that angle either, but I think that's something to consider because they do have souls. But for now, I would not recommend snowflake embryo adoption.
All right. Thank you, Anne, for that wonderful question. I think that's probably on the minds of a lot of folks. And here's the number that frees up a line for you, 888-318-7884 on this pro-life open forum. And let's see if we can squeeze in one more call before the break here. Deanne is in Alaska. Deanne, how's the weather up there?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to ask a question about gestational, you know, physiological, psychological, and even spiritual things that take place, you know, in the early stages of our development. The reason I'm asking is my mom was pregnant with me prior to getting married to my father, and it always felt like I was unwanted, but it was the right thing to do, so they did the right thing. And then I found myself in the very same situation with my own son, and I chose to keep him, even though they were encouraging me to abort the pregnancy. So I wonder sometimes how the stress of, you know, the physiological aspects that you go through when you're under that kind of stress, making decisions to terminate life or keep life, and how I can break that spiritually off of both myself and my son, feeling that sense of disconnection or being unwanted, even though we were both wanted. And, you know, I don't know if I'm explaining it okay, but that's kind of
yes,
what my
no, question yeah, is. No, I know exactly what you mean. And it's very clear that the pregnant mother's psychological state can have a big effect on the developing preborn baby. That's been documented in several studies. So we know that has a big effect on it. If a woman is depressed, that's going to have an effect. If there's anxiety going on, a lot of stress, it's going to have psychological effects on the preborn baby as well as physical effects. And so all those things are definitely there. So that's why we always try to make sure that a woman who's pregnant has a safe and healthy pregnancy, both through physical means or psychological means, make sure that she's content and someone's taking care of her. All of that is really critically important. And as far as the psychological effect passed on for because there was a doubt there if the baby would be kept, I think we need to do more research on that, but I would think that would have a profound effect in some cases, and it would depend on the sort of the psychological makeup of the individual. Now, in your case, I think you've concluded that this has had an effect, and I don't doubt that at all. So I would say the way to deal with it is, first of all, it would have to be on multiple levels. And the first, of course, would be spiritually, and that would be to pray to God to give you the consolation to know His love for you, because remember, all love comes from God, and we as human beings passing on love, we're just magnifying that love for God. That's why in Mary's prayer, it's called the Magnificat. She magnifies God, God's word. And so we do that too, but remember, the ultimate source is God, and so we have to pray to God that we feel and feel the manifestation of His love and feel the importance of us, and always remember that Jesus died on the cross for each and every one of us as an individual. And then when He was on that cross, He thought of you as an individual. He thought of your son as an individual. So I don't see how you could not feel super important knowing that He thought about you when He was on the cross for us. And so take that thought and just ponder it, reflect on it, reflect before the Blessed Sacrament, have your son reflect on it. And that's the beginning of it. The second part is talking about it with your son and sharing how much you love him and telling him that you love him very much. And by doing that, by explicitly expressing your love to him, you will be showing that you're a loving person and you will love yourself more. Part of that, the psychological part, also is counseling. Probably both of you could use counseling to work through those issues, because we're complicated beings psychologically, and sometimes we get ourselves really mixed up, and a good counselor, particularly a good Catholic counselor, can help you work through that. Then the third part is the physical part, because we are physical beings. So that means spending time together, doing things together, whatever hobbies, crafts, whatever things you like to do together, hiking, whatever, watching movies together, just spending time together, that physical proximity, you know, and hugging and touching, those sorts of things between son and mother, those are very powerful, because when we do touch our loved ones in appropriate ways, chemicals are released in our brain that help us psychologically. So we have to really rely on all three fronts, the spiritual, the psychological, and the physical, and that will allow the two of you to heal and to know just how important you are in God's eyes.
That's wonderful. I appreciate you addressing all three of those for me. That gave me some good insight. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. God bless you.
Thank you, Deanne. We appreciate that. And, well, she didn't tell us how the weather was, but I have a feeling she probably would say cold and snow is on the way here. But that does free up a line for you. Here's the number again, 888-318-7884. And you hear that music. So we've got a break coming up, but we will be back in a few minutes. And there's a lot more to come. We've got Jim and Sam, your questions there, and yours at 888-318-7884. Call now and you can get in and talk to Dr. George Delgado on a open forum. Pro-life is the topic. Stay tuned.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible as a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Sherry Brown-Rigg in for Cy Kellett, who is away. And this hour, it's an open forum. Pro-life issues are the topic that we're talking about. And, you know, so many different things along the issues of pro-life. We've got, of course, abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, stem cell research, you name it. If you want to grab a phone line, you can do so right now at 888-318-7884. Looking ahead to tomorrow, by the way, it's a double open forum. We've got Father Paul Keller in the first hour and Jimmy Akin in the second hour. So start working on your questions for tomorrow. All right, Dr. Delgado, let's head back to the phones now. We've got Jim in New Jersey, and Jim is listening on Domestic Church Media, 89.3 FM. Hello, Jim, and welcome to Catholic Answers.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Thank you for everything you're doing. This is a fantastic show, and it's a fantastic program. I just wanted to make a comment about adoption. And adoption is not spoken enough in the pro-life circles as a terrific option. And for anyone who's listening on this call who's suffering from infertility, you really should think about the adoption option. And the adoption option is also available in the United States, which most people don't seem to realize these days, that there's an active adoption ability in in the United States. My wife and I were fortunate to adopt two children, one born in New Jersey and one born in Pennsylvania nearby, and we were fortunate enough to be able to adopt newborns, where we actually took them home from the hospital. So the gift, as you said earlier on the call, that the gift, the child is absolutely a gift, and I think we should just talk more about options and the adoption option as part of the range of solutions to the crisis we have in this country.
I think your point is very well made, Jim, and by not mentioning it, I didn't mean to minimize it. I think it's a wonderful, great, life-giving option. It's a blessing for the baby that's adopted or the child that's adopted, and as well as the family that receives that child. What a wonderful gift of a family that is, and how it can change people's lives on both sides. Absolutely.
Jim, thank you so much for your call. And Dr. Delgado, I myself have a lot of adopted nieces and nephews, and it's just wonderful. Many of them are having their own children now, and, you know, just what a beautiful witness it is to the power of family. And, you know, being adopted, we think about being adopted into Christ's family, and we get to do that for children as well. So it really is a wonderful option.
It is, yes.
Yeah. All right, we're heading now to Sam in Lincoln, Nebraska. He's listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Hey, Sam, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello. I guess I kind of have a question building off of that as well, of the adoption, and maybe just have some just general information, curious about foster care versus adoption, and maybe how... Because the previous question before that, you talked about growing up in the biological mother's arms and maybe some difficulties of adoption and not knowing your biological parents, and maybe how to deal with that.
Sure. So, yeah, the comments I made before, though, are different, and that was in relation to a deliberate attempt by a couple to create a baby outside of the natural means. And so that's different than when you have a baby who was, is already born or is going to be born, but for whatever reason, the family is in crisis or the family cannot take care of that baby, and the baby would otherwise be abandoned or neglected. So in that case, stepping up and adopting is a whole different thing, because you're not creating the baby for that reason, or gestating the baby for that reason. Instead, you are just stepping in where a family needs help and can't do it themselves, and you're stepping in to be that family for that baby. So everything else about the baby's development up until that point was normal and was natural and was in keeping with God's plan. And the way I tell some women who are in crisis pregnancies, and when we discuss adoption sometimes, is I'll say, you know, the usual course of events is that you carry this baby inside of you for 9 months, and then you raise the child until maybe 18 to 20 years of age. And the child goes off and, you know, starts his or her own family, and someone else really is responsible. There are circumstances where you can't take the baby past 9 months because you simply don't have the wherewithal or the means or the support to do it. And so you do your best and you do those 9 months, and then you sort of hand off the baby early off to a family that can do that. And so you see that's still the normal moral and physiologic progression of things. It's just the timetable has been shifted a bit. So that's why the regular adoption of babies and children who are not produced in a laboratory is fine and laudable and something that we always encourage, and it's a great thing. It's a great gift, like I said. And so that's the whole difference there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Right. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate that. 888-318-7884. Next, we go to Houston, Texas, and listening on AM 1430, Guadalupe Radio Network. I believe it's Gian, and is that right? Did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was worried about that one, Gia, so. All right, so what's your question for Dr. Delgado? Go ahead, Gia, with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Okay. Hi. Good evening, Dr. Delgado. My question is, is it considered wrong in the eyes of God to have your tubes tied after you have gone through the sacrament of confession, and if you're not married? You were once married, and then because of some trauma they experienced, they had their tubes tied, and then, you know, their marriage broke apart, and they still have their tubes tied. I'm not sure if this person went to confession and talked about it, but my question is whether or not do they have to have it physically removed to not be seen as wrong in the eyes of God, or can they go to the sacrament of confession and is it washed away, or there's, you know, that act is washed away?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So this is going to apply to anyone who's had a sterilization procedure, which is, of course, is as close as you can get to permanently not being able to have children. And if a person repents, that's a great thing, because he or she is now realizing the wrong that was done. So that person, if he or she is Catholic, has a responsibility to go to confession, of course, and to confess that sin. And then the priest, of course, will, assuming everything, it's a good confession, the priest will give absolution, and God has forgiven that sin. Now, the priest, of course, will give a penance, and for the most part, priests do not give a penance of having to reverse the sterilization surgery. That most people feel that would be a penance that would be difficult for most to fulfill. Now, it doesn't say in the right circumstance a priest wouldn't or can't, because in the right circumstance it might be the appropriate thing to do. But for the most part, priests do not give that penance, in my experience of hearing about stories. So then the question is, should that person, of his or her own volition, in order to not just be spiritually right with God, but sort of to be physically right, should that person go have a reversal of the surgery? That, for the most part, is totally up to the person, and so that's a discernment process where that person should discern and really determine what God wants him or her to do. And if God wants that person to have a reversal, I think it's a great thing to do, to restore the physical integrity of the body, because that physical integrity, of course, was damaged, but it's not necessary. So I think it's an individual case-by-case. And even if the person really doesn't want more children, I think the person should really discern as to whether or not God is calling him or her to have that procedure reversed. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Gia. We appreciate that wonderful call there. 888-318-7884. Next up is Josh in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Josh. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
We're well. How are you doing?
Dr. Delgado? I'm good. I'm glad to hear it. My question, Dr. Delgado, is it's regarding the something that I question a lot often is the ethics surrounding organ and tissue transplantation. I wonder about the informed consent process and the thoroughness of it. Because I've been made aware that a lot of the organ and tissue banks are storing serological samples, and I've also been told that they have ambitions to sort of move into the human stem cell transplantation field. So I really wonder a lot of times if people know what's actually involved, their potential, and you know, sort of on the same topic of the snowflake babies, you know, a lot of the tissue samples are being stored or frozen or dried and kind of commoditized. Could you maybe help me to understand this a little bit?
Sure. That's a sort of a big question with lots of different angles. The basic question, is it ethical to donate organs and tissues? If you're a living donor, that was actually a big ethical dilemma when this first came about. Should a person damage his or her own body in a way by taking an organ that at least has some vital function to give it to another person. And so it really was an ethical challenge to reconcile that. And but the conclusion is that as long as a person freely gives his or her own organs or body parts to another person, and as long as the net improvement in health of the recipient is greater than the detriment of health to the donor, then from an ethical standpoint, it's acceptable. So we have that. Then we have also the issue of cadaveric organ donors, and those are people when they die, when their organs are harvested. Now, that is technically and ethically a little more problematic. If the person truly is dead and the person freely consented to give the organs before death, and death has not hastened in any of the process, then taking the organs and giving them to another person is very noble and laudable, and that's a very good thing. Now, the problems come in if there's any coercion, if the patient doesn't understand what he or she is signing, or if we're not sure that the person really is dead, or if death is hastened in order to get the organs. Any of those things would violate the dignity of that human person and could even constitute an act of killing. And of course, in those cases, that would not be ethically appropriate. It would be an evil. We also know of, or at least we read about stories in China where there are forced donation of organs by prisoners and others and coercion. And that, of course, violates human dignity, and that's morally evil. We would not want that. As far as taking some of these tissues and developing them into stem cells, in and of themselves, those actions are not bad and actually are quite good, because once the tissues are outside of the person's body, they no longer, you're now manipulating just tissue and not a person's body. And so if you can take those and develop stem cells, those would be the adult type stem cells, and those would not have any intrinsic moral evil attached to them. However, again, if the person has not given consent to that, then that's when, like with any other situation where you do something without fully informing someone, then that would ethically be inappropriate. So those are kind of the several angles that you have to look at with this whole area of tissue and organ transplantation. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Thank you for your thorough response and answer. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate that call, too, and very, very smart question. All right, there is still more to come here with Dr. Delgado and a pro-life open forum, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen. Join us every week as we talk with the Register's expert writers and editors about the news you need to know and offer authentic Catholic insights on the important stories that impact your life. Register Radio, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett. Hey, you know, the Bible is a Catholic book, and do you know why? Well, Jimmy Akin can help you explain it. He'll help you learn it and then explain it to others. Don't wait another minute. You can go right to Catholic.com and click on Jimmy Akin's free video course tile near the bottom of the page. It's free. You enroll today, and you are going to be able to really defend that, that indeed the Bible is a Catholic book. All right, we're back here for our final segment of the Pro-Life Open Forum. And Dr. Delgado, before we go back to the phones, you know, something that's really been kind of bothering me lately is with the advent of, the legalization of homosexual unions in America, I'm not sure if we can really call it marriage, even though the secular society does. What's happening is that there are a lot of designer babies, so to speak, in that, you know, two people of the same sex cannot naturally conceive a child, so they have to go to other means. And so they're involving another parent, whether it be female or male, depending on the sex of the two in the union. But it really is creating a whole class of children, you know, generation of children who don't really have their own mother and father right there. You know, from the very get-go, they're designed, even conceived from that very understanding of this child will not know its own mother and father. And clearly, that's wrong. I mean, we know that, but can you comment a little bit on that about what's so wrong about it so that we can talk to others about it?
Sure, and yeah, and these kind of questions, you always want to come from a standpoint of truth, but always you want to be presenting the truth very charitably, because people who are in these situations are often very, very sensitive, very defensive. They want affirmation. And when you don't give affirmation, sometimes they get angry. But at the same time, you can't affirm something that goes against the natural moral law. That's just, it's irrational to do that. So I think, you know, the first thing is what we've discussed already is that a child has the right to be conceived within the marital embrace of husband and wife, which is a male and a female, in a natural marital embrace, and then has the right to be gestated within his biological mother's uterus. So that's a pretty simple principle, but it's very, very profound and important. And so when you have a same-sex couple seeking to conceive a child, then of course they have to resort to someone else outside of the relationship. So right away, first of all, that you have a third party, and I'm not going to say violating their relation, their union, because really it's an unnatural union according to the natural law when you have a same-sex union. So it's not so much that you're really violating that union. You really are just, you're introducing a third party who now has a stake or has contributed to that child. And you're using means that involve technicians and doctors, and so you're introducing other parties. So it's really an affront to the dignity of that newly created person that all of these different people were involved, that totally violates God's design and God's plan for procreation. Then, of course, you have the practical complications, which we mentioned earlier, and that's when you have this third party. Well, 5 years down the line, hey, I'm the biological father of that child that those two, the women in a same-sex relationship have, so I want to be involved. And they say, no, you don't. And then so what happens? You get a court battle and you get a tug of war with this child, this innocent child, who now is the subject of a legal proceeding to see who really has rights to spend time with him or her. So that becomes a very, very problematic from a practical standpoint. And then, of course, we know just from sociological data, from studies, is that the same-sex unions are inherently less stable than natural marriages between men and women. And those are just the facts, unfortunately. It's not placing judgment on anybody, but that's just what happens, is that there is more infidelity, there's more breakup. And so you're subjecting a child to a less stable home life and upbringing. And of course, people who support these kinds of unions are going to cite different research that says that there's no difference in a home as long as it's a loving home. But that research, from my understanding and talking to experts in this area, is flawed research, and it's biased research. And so when you look at this from a really unbiased standpoint, if you look at all the data and the studies that have been evaluated and produced, for example, by the Ruth Institute, you see that people who are raised in these kinds of homes really do suffer psychologically, and they do not do as well. They're not as well adjusted. So all of this means that it's a great affront. And again, it comes back to, is the child a gift or is the child a right? If the child's a right, then you have a right to make or bake that child any way that you can possibly do it in any kind of relationship, including third and fourth parties, and that's okay. But we hold true to the natural moral law and to our Catholic teachings, which is that, and what the Bible tells us is that children and all people are gifts, and we have to treat them with respect, and we have to honor them as gifts, and we have to accept them on God's terms, and we have to be stewards for those children and not be the masters of those children.
Yeah. Okay, that's very, very helpful. All right, let's head back to the phones now. We're actually going to go to line two. Brian is calling us from Pennsylvania. And hey, Brian, you are on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, my question is related to vaccines that come from aborted fetal lines, in particular, like hepatitis A, which doesn't have an alternative that's available in the United States, and what are the moral options or the right things to do to protect my children, but still deal with that situation.
Right. So, yeah, that's a big problem. So you're right about that hepatitis A. There's also the rubella portion of the MMR vaccine, as well as the varicella or chickenpox vaccine. Those are all grown on human cell cultures, and those human cell cultures were started from cell lines, and those cell lines were established using cells taken from aborted babies. And those were abortions where there was a researcher standing by right there waiting to get the tissue. Those were scheduled retrievals of tissue specifically for research and to establish these cell lines. So there weren't just babies that happened to be aborted and, oh, somebody came over and took the cells. No, it was all scheduled and very much a part of that abortion. So there is, I call those vaccines as being ethically tainted. So now some of the vaccines, we do have moral alternatives. For example, the polio vax, we have the alternative called IPOL. The pentacell combination vaccine shot, we have the alternative Pediarix. But you're right about the rubella portion of the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, the hepatitis A, and the varicella. There's no alternative here in the United States. So the church has actually commented on this and has said that if there is a good reason for the child to receive the vaccine in order to protect the child's health, then the parents in good conscience can give that vaccine if there's no alternative. But the church also recommends that the parents write a letter to the healthcare practitioner and to the vaccine manufacturer urging them to use alternatives. So then the question comes down to, well, should we do it from a practical matter? The other concern from a practical and medical standpoint is that these vaccines that are grown on human cell cultures are contaminated with human DNA, and there is some concern that that contamination may lead to problems with the neurologic development with the babies. It's not been proven, but it's certainly a valid concern. And so what I recommend is that if the vaccine is not truly necessary, for example, let's say chickenpox, perhaps we could defer it and wait until the child is older. That gives us the opportunity to wait for an ethical vaccine to be produced. And if not, then you can, in good conscience, give that vaccine at a later age when the child might get much sicker from chickenpox. With the hepatitis A, if the child is not going to be traveling to a third world country somewhere where he might encounter hepatitis A, we'll maybe not give it, because children actually don't get that sick from hepatitis A. The public health impetus to give the hepatitis A vaccine to all children was because children were getting hepatitis A, spreading it to their parents. The parents then would get extremely sick. So an alternative might be instead just to vaccinate the parents and don't vaccinate the kids until they get older and there's a better vaccine, or then give it to them when they're older teenagers. With the rubella portion, the MMR, not a good option there, but that vaccine is given between 12 and 18 months of age. I might just defer it until 15 to 18 months. Don't give it on the earlier side. Hopefully that gives you some insight.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, for the call. Very insightful, and we do appreciate that, Dr. Delgado. I think a lot of us are wondering the same questions here. Dr. Delgado, thanks for being with us tonight.
It was a pleasure.
We really appreciate that. And coming up tomorrow, we've got an open forum. The whole day is dedicated to that. Father Paul Keller will be in the first hour, Jimmy Akin the second. So start working on those questions, and I'll be back then as well. I look forward to talking to you then. Until tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live. God bless.